Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Good morning. I am Ron Wilson, your personal yard boy, talking about yarding on a very, well, it's the weekend before Halloween, and the weather has just drastically changed for us. I don't know about you, but the major change here, and of course, we had some rain. And let's find out what happened in Joe Strecker's yard and garden, because it always never, for some reason, never seems to match what happens in my yard and garden.
Or anybody else's.
That happens to be Joe Strecker, our executive producer. He's in charge of our website at ronwilsononline.com. Facebook page, In the Garden with Ron Wilson. Of course, his wife's lawn and landscape.
Right.
He is the workhorse to take care of that.
The pack mule.
Good morning, sir.
Well, I know Halloween is coming up, and it's one of my favorite holidays, but it's another holiday today.
Is it truly a holiday?
Sure.
Okay.
We'll go with that.
All right.
There's another holiday today.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
October 24th.
October 24th. It's another holiday today around noon.
At noon. Of course, it kind of kicked off last night. Big Ten. But, yeah, I do know what's going on today at noon.
Yes.
Where will you be?
Yes. I will be watching...
I know where I'm going to be.
Something on TV.
I'm going to be settled in watching something on TV also.
Yes, it's going to be a football season has finally started.
It finally is firing up.
You know, all those weeks beforehand, doesn't matter.
Say what you say about
like
all the other teams.
7 weeks of preseason.
That's right.
The season finally starts.
The Buckeyes are back.
Yes. 21 or 24 point favorites today?
I don't know. I never look at the line.
Wow.
They're always the favorite in my book.
It's going to be a great year.
I hope so. I think you come out of there kicking and just keep on kicking.
I tell you what. I mean, this is, I know we're turning this to a sports thing, but it's my cup, so I'll do what I want.
You can do whatever you want in your cup.
I do what I want.
That's right.
I tell you, the college football season this year has been incredible. Some of those games that I've seen this year have just been nuts.
They have been.
there have been blowouts, but it's like, my goodness, some of those games are just incredible.
Now, you know the one factor that's not in those stadiums,
the fans.
Yeah. So it's me against you.
Yeah,
and I don't have the fans. You know, you got your team to back you up, but
I still miss the ambiance of hearing the fans crazy.
But I think it makes a difference. I mean, how they play, I think, is a lot different too.
Yeah. Well, they can actually hear each other play. There's no, we have to go on a silent count or anything.
Exactly. So now you can hear everything, but there's nothing there to fire you up besides your own teammates and yourself.
It's the best time of
year. It's like running a Kentucky Derby without the jockeys.
Yeah.
Nobody in the stands. See which horse finishes first.
Yeah. Just kind of run them.
But you're right. Why is it exciting? Because the Bucks and Big Ten's. I got to throw the whole Big Ten in there, but the Bucks playing.
Yeah, because it's a little extra.
I've been kind of watching it. It's been okay, but now
it's ready to rock. Ready to rock.
We're back.
Going to be in red later.
Yeah.
Scarlet and gray.
Got to win them all.
Yep.
It's the only way they're going to make it.
Yep. OH.
I-O.
So my lawn and landscape.
Yes.
I kind of, you know, like I said a couple weeks ago, it's been put to bed. So
did you get some rain this week?
We did get lots of rain. Nice. We still got some annuals in the front that are still going. Gonna wait till they poop out and, you know, just kind of budging forward, you know.
I think
we may have
today's only supposed to be in the mid 50s.
Yeah, we may have one mowing left. I think? It's kind of getting long in the tooth.
I bet it's more than that.
Kind of getting long in the tooth in the back.
I'm going for two.
You thinking two?
I'm going two.
I know we got at least one.
What do you do
going.
With the leaves?
We don't have any trees in our yard
well,
anymore.
Your neighbors do.
I don't know.
Don't have that many leaves?
Not anymore. Yeah. Not anymore. We used to have a ton, but not anymore. Our neighbor's tree may have some, but not as
doesn't
bad
come
as,
in your yard.
Not as bad as it was in the past.
They don't use a leaf
it's
blower
actually
like
more,
you do and blow them over to the neighbor's yard.
It's usually more in the spring with those the petals, the little white petals on the tree next door.
Yeah. Was that a crab apple?
Might be.
I don't remember.
It's a big tree, though. Hmm. Very big tree. It's been there since before the houses were there.
Then it's not a crab apple.
No, but it's got white little petals that fall every year.
Hmm.
White or like a light pink? I don't know.
Maybe a cherry.
Maybe. So yeah, it's that's just kind of the way it's been going. And two more mowings. And it's now since the weather's kind of getting chilly, it's that time of year.
What time of year?
You know, I don't like it, but it's going. It's. Yeah,
do we decide on the pumpkins, what we're doing?
I can't stop it. Not yet.
Paint or carve?
You know, my vote is.
I know what your vote is, but, you know, everything has totally changed in the Strecker household.
No, we haven't decided yet. Okay. They're still sitting on the front porch.
It won't be a surprise at all if they're carved pumpkins.
They're still sitting on the front porch, so.
All right.
So, yeah. If it's paint, I'll do it. If it's carve.
I'm out.
So guests today on the program.
Oh, big show today. Ooh. Big show today. Big guest.
Welcome to the big show.
Marnie Titchnell. You know Marnie.
Oh, yeah.
From OSU Extension.
Oh, yeah.
She coordinates all the wildlife there, including Buggy Joe Boggs' backyard.
I think she owes me money.
Marnie owes you money? Well, we're doing this just because of you.
Yeah.
Because today kicks off Bat Awareness Week.
Na 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 na.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And there's a couple great websites for that Ohio started one, and there's a national one as well. But it's National Bat Awareness Week. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you had your bat about a month ago.
Yeah, about a month ago, yep.
So we'll talk about your bat.
My bat.
And why bats are good and why you shouldn't poke them with a stick and let them hang out.
I didn't kill it. I just kind of moved it.
I'm just saying. Get them to hang around. So Marnie's going to be with us, and then we're going to talk to Olivia Carrill. Now, you probably don't remember Olivia, but she wrote the book, The Bees in Your Backyard. It's a great book about native bees. She's going to be on with us this morning. We'll talk about the book and native bees. And, of course, do you know Ohio has more, they think, more native bees, species of bees than any other state?
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, anyway, they're going to put on a webinar, she and Thane Maynard from the Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo, on Monday.
Yes.
And this is a really cool webinar talking about native bees.
And if you want to go to the webinar.
Yes, you have to register.
Yes.
Well, guess what?
There's a link on the website?
You put the link on our website.
Huh.
And actually posted the pollinator report from the Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo.
Yes.
And it has the place to register. So you can go right there and click and register for that coming up on Monday. But we're going to talk to her about that today and what they're going to talk about and all that kind of stuff. So, of course, Gary Selwood and Buggy Joe Boggs.
In addition to all that stuff on the website as well, we have the usual Rita's, I guess, an overdrive because she did two recipes this week. She has.
Well, she didn't do two recipes.
Well, she wanted us to post two recipes. Caramel bourbon bacon.
Is it caramel or caramel?
Whatever.
Which is it?
It all depends on, you know, if I'm saying something, if I'm at Grater's and I'm saying I want caramel fudge.
Caramel huts, yeah.
But if I'm being fancy, I'll say caramel.
Okay.
There's that, and then there's a raspberry jam.
Remember where that came from? The lady that listens to us up in Marion, Ohio, talking about how to get rid of your extra green tomatoes.
Yeah.
Two recipes on how to get rid of extra green tomatoes. I mean, have nothing to do with green tomatoes.
Yep.
Cakes and jams.
Green tomato cake and jam. It's that time of year.
Yeah.
The plan of the week kind of goes along with another tip sheet. The plan of the week is the buckeye tree.
It kind of goes along with what's happening at noon today is what it kind of goes along with.
Yep. So we got the buckeye tree, how to grow your own buckeye tree. And what's that picture there?
What is that picture?
Huh. That's going to be January sometime later next year.
Think so?
Mm-hmm.
Is that when they play? Would be January?
I don't know. I'm going to assume.
How that's all going to work out.
So, yeah, that's just a preview of what it's going to look like sometime around January.
I like it. Mm-hmm.
Here you go. So, yeah, grow your own Buckeye tree. Buckeye tree is the plan of the week. And Buggy Joe's got some stuff up there, too. And that's pretty much it.
I like it.
That's pretty much it. Got a shout out to Dr. Z. Did you know that Dr. Z has a Funko Pop?
A what?
You know, those little figures that like have big heads that kind of look like a bobblehead.
Right.
That all the kids are collecting these days.
Right.
Dr. Z's got one of himself.
He does?
Yeah.
No way.
Go to his Facebook page.
Seriously?
I'm as a heart attack.
Does it look like him?
It's well, what's funny is, I don't know, I guess since he's been in Washington, he kind of grew up a little, maybe went through puberty. He's got like a, I guess he's doing a little stash.
Yeah.
And the Funko Pop's got a little stash. So when I saw it, I said, hey, that's a nice Funko Pop, but you need to clean that little stuff underneath the nose because there's a little dirt there. My little boy's growing up.
Your little boy's growing up.
Yeah.
The Dr. Z.
Dr. Z. Yeah. Check out the Dr. Z Funko Pop. I'm sure he's selling them.
Maybe we'll get it posted on our website.
Maybe.
Way to see.
Maybe. No, I'm not.
It was his birthday last week,
not
right?
Not kidding. It was. It was mine, too. But no one.
Was it last week?
No, it wasn't.
It was earlier in October.
It was about a week and a half ago. But
that's why I said it was earlier October. And you know who remembered it?
Not you.
I did. But you know who remembered it? And I forgot to bring it up. And I told you that. Rita.
Oh, she did. She did.
She wished you a happy birthday.
She did wish me a happy birthday. Yeah. She did. And Daniel ate all the birthday cake. So, thanks, Daniel. That was mine.
By the way, I have gifts for you.
Oh, you do?
A gift.
Oh.
The two of the three Stingers came down from Columbus Sunday.
Yeah.
And Teresa Parker brought you your, what's the stuff from last year with you add Coke to it?
Oh, the drink? That stuff? Yep. Oh.
That you took home and sipped all the time?
Oh, my goodness.
Well, and she brought more. And it says on the top, just for Joe.
I am, I need some more because I've sipped it the entire year, and I just drank the last about a couple weeks ago.
It says just for Joe on the
nice.
Top.
So nice.
I got some honey and honey butter. Nina made some honey butter for the first time. With that
cherry whiskey thing, you don't do it all at once. It's just like a special occasion. Well, but you do it on a special occasion. That's not right. just not like a random.
It's like your Schlibovitz.
Yeah, it's like, you know what? It's, I've had a really nice day, and it's time to pop open a nice little treat for me.
We won't hold. I'll get it to you, but we're not going to save it for the Thanksgiving special. We'll just get it to you early.
Nice.
So you can use it. So she said, make sure Joe gets his drink.
Thank you very much.
I know he said he was out.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Teresa Parker, always taking care of you.
She's awesome. She's awesome.
Yeah.
So, well, speaking of awesome, it's time for me to leave.
That's it.
And then you can continue on with your great show. And
put your coat on. It's cool out.
It says chilly.
A little chilly out there today.
Yeah.
All right. Nothing else.
That's it.
All right. Joe Strecker, our executive producer. Of course, he takes care of our Facebook page, In the Garden with Ron Wilson, and, of course, our website at ronwilsononline.com. If you like everything that you see on those, well, guess what? Joe had everything to do with it. But if there's something on there you may not like.
Not my fault.
Well, his fault. Let who know about it?
Let Daniel know about it.
Let Danny know about it.
He's not doing anything
kid.
Back
yeah,
there.
Yeah, he's just sitting back there relaxed.
Yeah.
And you can tell him that at 800-823-8255, here in the Garden with Ron Wilson.
Dr. Z.
Joe Strecker.
And Daniel.
How is your garden growing? Call Ron now at 1-800-823-TALK. You're listening to In the Garden with Ron Wilson.
Welcome back. You're in the garden with Ron Wilson. Again, our toll-free number, 800-823-8255. Talking about yardening. And let's straighten something up right away. Gary in Ohio, good morning.
Yes, Ron, you and Joe were talking caramel.
Yes.
Both of you are correct.
Don't tell Joe that, though.
Well, yeah, let's be fair with Joe. You know, okay. We don't want to. But North Central Ohio, is up around Mansfield, Shelby, et cetera, is supposed to be the most correctly spoken English language, bar none. No accents. Locally here in Licking County, there's a push the wheelbarrow, poosh.
Poosh, I have a lot of friends that say that.
There's fish and fish.
Right.
And then there's always, you know, creek, crick.
Yep.
But you both were correct, and I hope I'm giving you good good stuff here.
You know what? I think listening to the accents like the poosh, and I think that's always so interesting to look around the country and how you know how that you know has evolved and has changed over the years. But you're right, just right here in Ohio, how much that does change. But the caramel and caramel, I you hear it both ways.
Yeah.
So
the main thing is if you communicate and you understand each other, you're both good.
I agree with you 100%. As long as you can communicate and you understand what I'm saying,
yeah,
I agree with you 100%.
Well, okay, Ron.
All right, Gary.
Listen, you do a great job yourself with your talk on your program. There's no guessing what you are saying.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Sometimes my lips get in the way, but we try to do our best.
Yeah. Okay, Ron, I'm going to have a cup of Joe here, and I'll keep listening.
All right. Appreciate it. Good talking to you. Have another cup of Joe. I'm going to have a cup of Joe. Couldn't find coffee this morning, but I scrounged and found and made do. So thank you. We won't tell him that I stole it out of his office, but
he's going to know eventually.
He'll know eventually. I left him a note, said thank you very much. So anyway, drinking a little coffee this morning, and it's a little bit weird. We took the Keurig cups, and we broke them up and put them in a coffee maker, and how much do you put in there and all? Well, we did it anyway. So, yeah, caramel. You know, we always get into that. And, of course, talking with Dr. Alan Armitage, he's the same way about how do you pronounce plants? You know, Clematis, Clematis. Forsythia, you know, and the genus and the species. And everybody's a little bit different. And I know when I went to Ohio State, you know.
Potato, potato.
We went through all the classes, you know, and how to pronounce all of the plants. And then you come out of there and everybody's got to do it. It doesn't matter as long as you know what you're talking about and you understand what it is. However you pronounce it, it's okay. And Gary's exactly right. As long as you communicate with each other, exactly. That's the way you want to look at it. And I still remember having Raymond Evison on our show. And Raymond Evison, famous clematis breeder, he does all of them. He's from England. And he does all the clematis for the Queen of England and all of their palaces and all their places. And he does all the breeding there. And he's extremely well known. And I asked him, because I was a little bit nervous about having him on the show, because I said, first of all, let me get this out of the way. Is it clematis or clematis? Because he was saying clematis. And his point was exactly what Gary and everybody else had just said. I don't care how you say it. Clematis, clematis, it's up to you as long as you plant them and enjoy them. And tell everybody kind of what they are, and we all understand. And he's exactly right. All right, take a quick break. We come back. We'll jump back into the Garden phone lines at 800-823-8255 here in the Garden with Ron Wilson.
Green thumb or not, Ron can help at 1-800-823-TALK. This is In the Garden with Ron Wilson.
Welcome back. You're in the garden with Ron Wilson. Again, our toll-free number would be 800-823-8255. That's T-A-L-K, talk. Because we're talking about yardening. Moving our way through October. Cooling temperatures today. Some fronts moved through last night, dropping it back down for us into the 40s and 50s. We'll take that. It's fall, right? It's the 24th of October. It's supposed to be starting to get cool this time of the year. So we'll take it. And fortunately for us, and I hope for you as well, we got some great showers this week. Some good relief. Not at all out of the woods yet, but definitely some great relief with the rainfall, again, scattered around. So you have to check that rain gauge in your own backyard to figure out how much rainfall your yard got. And that's what's most important, not what's what it says on the news. But find out how much you had. But, you know, in some cases, we're looking at 1 to 2 inches of rainfall this week. Absolutely outstanding. We'll take that. But we are extremely, you know, it's been extremely dry up to this point. And you want to build on that now. So don't just let the showers come through. That's why I was sometimes it kind of, you almost wish they wouldn't just come through and rain. Because everybody gets fooled and say, well, it's rain. We don't have to do it in water anymore. False. You still need water. Build on that a little bit, you know, so you've gotten some moisture into the ground. Dig down just for the heck of it. You get, you know, an inch or two of rainfall. Dig down with a spade into the ground. Find out how deep that moisture went down. See how far it went down. And when it's really dry, sometimes it doesn't go down as far as you think it went down into that ground. So, again, build on it. Continue to water those evergreens. As a matter of fact, this week I got a great email with a picture from a very nice lady, listens to our show, that said, I've got a couple Alberta spruce, planted them. I think they were been there for about a year or so. So they've been starting to root in over a year or so. But kind of lightening in color a little bit, right up against the foundation of the home. Is this normal or going in the fall or what? And I couldn't tell. Obviously, sometimes we can get into a little mite issue with them or whatever. But, you know, sometimes evergreens do lighten in color going into the fall-winter season. Kind of, they'll lighten up. And, of course, they do their needle shedding, for the most part, this time of the year as well. Not all evergreens, but most of them do. So, of course, you look outside, like right now, you look at white pine and it just scares the heck out of you because these bright yellow needles all the way out to the very, close to the very ends, because they'll lose pretty much all their older needles, depending on how dry it's been out there, and they'll drop all of those, so the only thing left is what came out this year. Spruce, on the other hand, will drop their oldest set of needles, and they have a tendency to hang on to needles for 2, 3, 4 years. So when you look into a spruce, if you look back into the center of it, you notice it has needles that kind of go all the way back to the middle, for the most part, back into the end of the plant fairly deep. That's because it hangs on to several years of older needles. Whereas you look into a lot of the pines, all the needles are pretty much out on the ends and not much to the center of the plant because they drop all of those needles. And spruce is very good at, they have buds back inside. They'll pop out some growth inside and all, where pines a lot of times won't do that. But anyway, that's why you see it so drastic on pines in the fall. And sometimes you don't notice it quite as much on spruce, although this year we are, thanks to the fact that we've been so dry going into the fall season. It also, you know, it accelerates, amplifies what you're seeing out there. So anyway, it can scare you to death, but as long as it's just to the center of the plant 99.9% of the time, you're in pretty good shape. Nevertheless, you need to be watering. And by the way, I say some, not all evergreens, taxus and a few others will actually do that in the springtime. Broadleaf evergreens will actually do some shedding in the springtime as well. So you have to, don't let that freak you out in the springtime as well. But again, building on that rainfall that we've gotten, keeping those moist, because we don't want to have those going into the fall and winter season under stress. If you haven't been watering, obviously they're under stress. Got to get them out of that. Get them back into some good moisture before we get into the winter season. And if you're planting new evergreens in the fall, that's great. Fall's a great time for planting. And we still have plenty of time to plant. You know, fall goes right into the end of December, so you still have plenty of time to plant as long as Mother Nature gives us the right weather to get out and plant. But, again, you've got to water, and you've got to make sure that immediate root ball and surrounding area, but immediate root ball has good moisture in it. But anyway, going back to the Alberta spruce, hadn't been watered, kind of let Mother Nature doing its thing, so they've lightened up a little bit in color. And I always suggest this for Alberta spruce anyway in the spring and in the fall, because they can be subject to what's called cool season mites. Mites that are mostly active in the spring and mostly active in the fall during the cooler times of the year. And if you get them on it in the fall, you don't really notice the yellowing and all till we get out of the winter, and then you think it's winter damage, it was actually mite damage, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, so what do you do to help combat that? We don't have to spray them with an insecticide or miticide, really, to keep it under control. You go in there, and about every 10 days to 2 weeks, you hose it out. You take the hose, and you put it on a real strong stream, all right? And you go in there, and you really flush out those evergreens, those Alberta spruce. You go up and down, and you spray those and spray them hard and flush them out. And what that does, it flushes out the old needles from the inside. You'll see those flush out. And with that strong stream of water will also knock off a lot of the mites that are maybe, if you have mites, maybe on the plant. If you don't, that's okay because you're at least flushing it out and getting those old needles out of there. And the third benefit is the fact that you are watering the Alberta spruce at the same time. So you give it great moisture going into the winter season. I've always recommended that for Alberta spruce, doing it in the springtime for about 6 weeks, doing it again in the fall, in October and early November for about a six-week period. That seems to help keep both of those in check, being too dry, and in case any small mite populations or whatever might happen to be on there, you get rid of them. So, again, if you've got Alberta spruce, it might not be a bad idea, or any evergreen, really, to go out there and just hose them out, really strong stream of water, knock all those old needles that are falling down, and water it at the same time. And again, remember, when these plants are up against the foundation of the home, even though it may be on the south or west side where the it gets rain and it gets hit a lot right now with some of the storms that are coming through, still a lot of times up against the foundation of the home, you don't get as much moisture there as you can get out in the middle of the yard, especially behind the plants. The plants can actually stop the rainfall from going behind them. So as we go into, the fall season, one of those reminders is, if you have foundation plantings that are fairly close to the foundation, you may want to make sure you're watering the entire bed so that you've got moisture behind the plants as well. And, you say, well, I don't want to create any problems in my basement. If watering your foundation plants creates problems in your basement, you got other issues with your foundation. Then you need to talk to Gary Sullivan and get that straightened out. But you need to keep good moisture in front and behind those plants. And a lot of times when they brown out to the back side of the foundation or thin out, it's twofold. It's one, because it's shadier back there, so they don't have as much sun. And two, because it's drier back there, so they're not getting as much moisture. So again, going into the fall season, and into the winter, it's good to make sure you're watering behind them as well. So if you have Alberta spruce or any of the evergreens out there right now that you see that are browning to the inside, turning brown, if it's really scaring you, take a couple pictures of it. Let somebody take a look at it to make sure it's the normal fall needles drop, which they will all go through. And then take the hose, knock all that stuff down so you don't see it, and water those evergreens at the same time. It really does help them out, especially if you have those Alberta spruce. And even more so, they're always planted up close to the foundation to get a little bit of moisture there because of the fact that it's always drier up around the foundation than it is out in the landscape. Before we take a break, we'll go to Dayton, Ohio, and talk to our good buddy Dick from Dayton. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How about yourself?
Well, I was telling Danny last week, we did it again. We got awards for the front end, the cashiers and the loaders.
Yes, sir.
Got another little, actually, Carla and Kelly sent me a card and thanked me for the work, and we had good food. We had pizza and everything, but life's good, Ron. Life's good. And so we were awarded in the district best front end.
Good for you. Good for you. You deserve it. Now, did you sing for anybody while you were there?
No, no, no.
Nope.
The only time we had a little bit of a jam session, a lot of people in the band are still, passed away, and we play every Monday. We're not going to play Monday because Kay's got something at her church choir. We get about 13 people in there. We bought Larry Smith. He was pretty good. He plays a lot of the, he sounds like Louis Armstrong. He plays the cornet and,
yeah,
and the trombone. Oh, it was good.
Oh, that adds to it.
Oh, have you had a chance to hear the CD?
We gave it to the folks at iHeart so they can approve it. And then we're going to bring it back and put it in our system so we can play it, use it for bumper music, too.
Was it acceptable through iHeart?
We're going to find out. They haven't given it back to us yet. Dan's going to get it checked and make sure that it's okay for us to use it for bumper music. And then we'll all get to listen to it at the same time.
Yeah, well, when I call maybe next week, you can play it a couple excerpts, huh?
I'm hoping we'll have it done by then.
Yeah, well.
All right.
Hey.
Hey, well, your Bengals didn't
going to win tomorrow.
Well, I was going to say
21-20. I told Gary Jeff
they didn't win last week.
No,
but now you're saying probably this week.
Yeah, and what they might pull one off.
What are you saying? 21 to what?
21-20.
21-20. So it's going to be a nail biter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? You never talk about college football. You like any college teams?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm anxious about that, too, because up north, there's a station that, has talk radio. Have you heard? Well, you go down there, the dial, don't you? WTVN?
I know. Yeah, I do.
Oh, yeah.
They got pregame.
You see somebody, say hello to, he's the morning man up there, Joel Riley.
Oh, I'm on with Joel every now and then.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, and then, of course, if you call there today, you're going to talk
they got another open phone,
right.
Harry Jeff done said. Bob Randolph says he was telling me Joel said hi to you, Dick. You were always a longtime listener because, there's somebody else on there that used to come from Cleveland. He did the Buckeye. Remember Munch on Sports?
Oh, yeah, I loved the Muncher.
Yeah.
He was great.
Yeah, he's pretty popular on your sister station up there.
Yep, he's I love the man. Does a great job. Hey, we got to go, Dick. Always a pleasure.
Okay, talk to you next week.
All right, bye-bye. Dick from Dayton, ladies and gentlemen. Take a quick break. We come back. We're taking your calls. Coming up at the top of the hour and the bottom of their next hour, we got a couple great guests. We're going to talk to Marnie Tichnell. She's going to talk about Bat Awareness Week. We're going to talk about bats. What do you know about bats? I don't know a lot about them, but we're going to find out more about them. Then at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk about native bees with Olivia Carrill. She's been on our show before. Great book. And a webinar she's got that she wants you to come and attend on Monday. We'll talk more about that. All happening here in the garden with Ron Wilson.
Landscaping made easier with your personal yard boy. He's in the garden, and he's Ron Wilson.
Welcome back. You're in the garden with Ron Wilson. Again, that toll-free number would be 800-823-8255, talking about yarding. Don't forget our website, ronwilsononline.com, and, of course, Facebook page in the garden with Ron Wilson. There's always some chatting going on there on Saturday mornings. Great postings, as usual, every week, I think, on our website. But this week, a couple things I wanted to just mention briefly. One is what you're going to find on there. Our plan of the week would be the Buckeye Tree, and obviously we're doing it today because the Buckeyes kick off Ohio State football season, and we'll see what happens there. Big Ten back at it again. So we put in the Buckeye Tree, but I think what's interesting about the Buckeye Tree is that, the Aeschylus glabra, or glabra, see, that's how you want to pronounce that, happens to be our state tree, the Ohio Buckeye, but there are many different types of Buckeyes out there, and it covers, Aeschylus is the genus, covers a wide array of trees and shrubs, including Japanese horse chestnut, Indian horse chestnut, red horse chestnuts, common horse chestnut, hybrid buckeyes, California buckeyes, Chinese buckeyes, Texas buckeyes, yellow, bottle brush, red, painted, and of course ours commonly known as the Ohio buckeye. So there's many different buckeyes all around the world. And of course we have about four or five of them that we see growing in our state, but you may have them growing in yours as well, or a combination of those. And so the ones I highlighted today that you can take a look at, it would be the Ohio Buckeye, again, that's the one that most people use the Buckeyes for, but you can use the Buckeyes for all of them for your decorations or whatever it may be. The Red Buckeye, which is, when it's a things in flower with the red flowers, absolutely outstanding, a smaller tree for you. Yellow Buckeye, which is the biggest of all of them, absolutely gorgeous big tree, and does a nice job with laying down a few buckeyes for you. Bottle Brush Buckeye, which we've talked about before, which is the shrub form, which really loves the shade and the sun either way. Can get up about, 10, 12, 15 feet high and wide, but just a big, massive shrub. And there are some smaller selections out there for you. And then Red Horse Chestnut, which is Carnea, Aeschylus Carnea, or Carnea, which is a hybrid It's a cross between horse chestnut and red buckeye. But these are all great ornamental trees that you might want to take a look at for planting, especially if you're a buckeye fan and plant those. And again, there's kind of a buckeye there for all the different situations in your yard and garden. So be sure and check them out. And, you know, a lot of times this time of the year when the Buckeyes kick off the football season, we all have our buckeye necklaces or the buckeye hats or whatever it may be. And you kind of get the fever that, man, I'd like to grow. Can I grow my own buckeye from the buckeye seeds? Well, you can. As a matter of fact, those are pretty darn easy to grow. The kicker is this. The most success you will have growing buckeyes / horse chestnuts from seed is when you collect them just as they ripen and fall from the tree. So in by mid-September or so, they start to fall from the tree. It goes into October. The sooner you can collect those and grab them from the squirrels, because the squirrels and other wildlife is going to eat them pretty quickly. But as soon as you can collect those up, fresh seeds from dropping off of the tree, the fresher they are, the better success you're going to have to get them to germinate and grow. And it's pretty easy. You just take that seed on the buckeye, the nut from the that leather covering that's on the outside. They're ready to plant. Right then, they're ready to plant. And you plant them about 2 inches deep. And, you know, kind of a general rule on something like that, when you're not sure how deep to plant, especially with a big nut like that one, it's usually about twice the diameter of the seed itself. So it's an inch in diameter. You plant it 2 inches deep. But they need that cold stratification, about the freezing temperatures, the cold temperatures for about 120 days. So you want to plant them in the fall so that they're subjected to the winter temperatures, and then they come up in the springtime. You can simulate that by putting them in small pots of soil and putting them in the back of the refrigerator at that 40 degrees. That does work for 120 days and then bring them back out. And if you put them outside and put them in containers, and when I used to do this all the time, I would just take like a larger container, like an 18-inch diameter container, and I would plant about 6 or 8 in that container. And then you'd just put chicken wire over the top, because if you don't, what's going to happen? Squirrels will find them and dig them up and take them away, and then you don't have any buckeyes at all. But put them in that, put chicken wire over the top, and leave them sit outside. And water them every now and then as needed, and then they'll start to sprout in the springtime. When they do, you separate them out, put them in their own pots, and go from there. So it's pretty easy to do. And sometimes, every now and then, you may even see one or two that'll germinate even in the fall and start to grow a little bit. Don't worry about it. It'll still be okay. But if you're interested in doing that, and you've got some fresh buckeye seeds, the nuts that have fallen, I have that tip sheet. It's connected with our plant of the week, the buckeye tree. Look right below it. It says growing your own buckeye tree. And a great picture that Joe put there, by the way. So you're able to grow your own from seed, and it's very easy to do. So, again, the fresh buckeye nut or fresh buckeye seed is the key to getting those to work for you, and you need to collect that up. And that would be something you get on right away. It gets much older. They may not be quite as germination rate might not be quite as good as you would have had you gotten them a little bit earlier. Also, our recipe, which I think is outstanding, it's bourbon bacon caramel or caramel popcorn, which sounds great. But along with Rita's recipe, this came to us, 2 or 3 years ago from a nice young lady who listens to our show up in Marion, Ohio on 1490 WMRN. Bunny. Her name is Bunny Butcher. Bunny Butcher. She listens to our show up there. And she said, you know, late in the summer and early fall, when I have lots of green tomatoes left over, folks are always looking, what do I do with those green tomatoes? She sent us two recipes. Are you ready for this? Mock raspberry jam and green tomato cake, that you use green tomatoes. So if you'd like to see those recipes to use up the last part of those green tomatoes, go to our website. It's RonWilsonOnline.com and check out Bunny Butcher's two recipes, mock raspberry jam and green tomato cake, plus Rita's as well. It's all at RonWilsonOnline.com. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We come back, got a couple great guests coming up. First, we're going to have Marnie Titchell. We're going to talk about bats. What do you know about bats? Make you go, ooh. Well, she's going to get that out of your system. And then we're going to talk with Dr. Olivia Carrill, who's been on our show before, so is Marnie. We're going to talk about native bees and a webinar she's got coming up that she wants you to attend, coming up on Monday to learn even more about them. It's all happening here in the garden with Ron Wilson.
Landscape. landscaping made easier with your personal yard boy. He's in the garden, and he's Ron Wilson.
Our toll-free number, same as it is every Saturday morning, it's 800-823-8255. Good morning. I am Ron Wilson, your personal yard boy, talking about yarding as we wind down this month of October. And as I promised, star-studded this Saturday, talking about all kinds of great things. And we're going to kick off our star-studded weekend with, well, as Joe Boggs put it last week, she's probably one of the baddiest people that I know, so you might as well have her on for Happy Bat Week. And I don't know what he meant by that, and I don't want to start anything, but to let you know what we're doing, it's International Bat Week. It starts today, just in time, of course, for Halloween next Saturday, and she knows everything about bats. And of course, she's been on our show before because she is OSU Extension Wildlife Program Specialist Marnie Tichenel. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Always a pleasure to have you on. How's the weather where you are?
You know, it's still dark outside, so I'm not sure.
Are the windows rolled up?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's supposed to be pretty cool today. So.
just making sure. I was telling Dan where you were doing this interview. Anyway, let's talk about bats because it is Bat Week. And I guess my first question, Marnie, to you is this. Why Bat Week?
Yeah. So, you know, Bat Week, it takes place every year, October 24th through the 31st. And this is actually an international celebration. So it's not just taking place in the U.S. It's not just taking place in Ohio. It happens across the world. And the main reason is to raise awareness about the need for bats and bat conservation, because these animals are incredibly important to our ecosystems. There are, you know, over 1,400 species of bats in the world, and no matter where they're living, they are contributing something to the ecosystems that they're living in.
Well, you know, they get a bad rap, and I know some folks are sitting there right now with their cup of coffee going, ooh, hey, no way, I'm not getting close to a bat. I could care less about bats. So I would have to think it somewhat could be a hard sell, although I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, well, thanks. I'm glad you do. And you're exactly right. I think one of the biggest challenges we have to conserving our bat populations is to overcome those negative stereotypes. And that's another big reason why Bat Week is important, you know, to help people understand that these are not just flying rats and they don't get stuck in your hair. They're not blind. They actually can see quite well. And some of them use echolocation, which is, you know, an ability that is more sophisticated than anything we as humans have created. So, there's a lot of cool things about these animals.
Of course, if they get in our attics and we got bats up in the attic, not a good thing. We don't like that. But that's our fault for having an opening where they can get in the first place.
Yeah. You know, of course, I have a love for bats, but I'm not going to tell anybody that you have to live with bats.
So you have holes all over the place for them to come in.
Yeah, sometimes that does happen, especially in older buildings and older houses. And
right.
some of our bat species will take up residence in our homes. But there's things that you can do about that as well.
Well,
you don't have to coexist with them.
Sure. Well, you know, here's the thing I do want to talk with you about. A couple things. One is if by chance I do find out there are bats in the attic and they've gotten in somewhere, which, you know, they have an opening that happened, occurred, whatever it may be. That's not, should you call someone out to get those out of there? I mean, obviously you don't want to just seal things up and hope that they die in there. You want to get them out. So
Oh, yeah.
Is that something a professional needs to do?
Yeah, that's usually what I recommend, is getting in touch with a professional, just because, as you mentioned, you know, it could be a little cracker crevice, and these bats aren't very large, so it could be something that's easily missed. So sometimes a professional is needed to really, really isolate and find out where all those entrances and exits are. You know, not to say that there aren't some cases where folks can kind of exclude the bats on their own. So basically what you're wanting to do is find where those bats are entering and exiting, and at the right time of year, which is usually later in the summer, you want to put up a little device that allows the bats to leave and not get back in. Because you're right, if you seal up all those entrances before the bats are gone, or if they aren't able to leave, we're in a mess of trouble. Yeah, we don't want to lose our bats.
So talk to us about some of the benefits. I mean, like in our area, like let's go to Ohio, for instance. How many different species of bats are we looking at in the state of Ohio?
Yeah, here in Ohio, we have 10 different species of bats. They are all insect eaters. They're all nocturnal. And they're active from, you know, about March, April, all the way through September, October. And so every night during that time frame, or almost every night, they're out there eating a bunch of insects and really helping us out.
So you say they're active during that period of time, which is obviously a warmer period of time. So then what happens to the bats once the temperatures start to cool down?
Yeah, great question. So some of our bats are highly migratory, and they may migrate to warmer parts of the country and overwinter there. And then some of our other species are going to travel shorter distances to different places to hibernate during the winter. So those places could be an underground cave or mine. Sometimes they're cliff edges or rock outcroppings, but they're going to become inactive during that time.
So they just kind of like a bear. They just kind of hibernate, kind of hang out, and I mean, you know, and then come back out in the springtime.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, yeah. They, you know, their main source of food, insects, are not real active during the winter time, so they have to do something to get through that drought, I guess you could say.
All right, so if I see bats out there, I think the other thing folks think of, I mean, let's just think about it, be serious. They think about blood-sucking bats, you know, it's going to jump on me, or get, like you said, gets in my hair. I don't know where that ever came from. Going to get in my hair and whatever, or I'm going to get rabies.
Yeah. Yeah, so here in Ohio, we do not have any vampire bats. They do exist, though, in other parts of the world, but Ron, this is maybe a topic for another day, but vampire bats are one of the coolest bat species, in my opinion. They're just so neat. They have so many really cool adaptations that allows them to exist solely on a diet of blood. Hmm. And most of that blood that they're drinking is not human blood, it's livestock.
Right.
But anyways, they don't live here, you know, so we don't have to worry about that. You know, I don't know where the myth for bats getting stuck in people's hair came from either. You know, somebody, just like you said, it was a fear, and Hollywood just took it and ran with it in movies and media and all that stuff.
Well, that's where it came from Hollywood, I think, because
yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
You know, the bat, and it gets in my hair, and, you know, I've got rabies, and I'm a vampire,
right.
And yeah.
Now, rabies, that is, you know, that is legitimate. So rabies is a disease of mammals, and so bats are not the only mammal that can get rabies.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes we do share living spaces with bats, so it's something that we should be aware of. The good news is that if you were to, you know, take a random sample of bats out there, less than 1% would actually have the disease. So it is rare among bats, but it's, you know, like I said, always something to be aware of and to keep in the back of your mind if you do encounter a bat that, you know, isn't moving and it appears to be sick and not well. You want to call your local health department.
So it's no different than if you find a raccoon or something and all of a sudden just hanging out on your patio that's not really acting right.
Exactly.
Kind of rolling. You know something's wrong. Leave it alone.
Trust your gut.
Your gut feeling and stay away from it. Talking with Marnie Tichnell this morning from OSU Extension. She's their wildlife program specialist. She helps to coordinate all of the wildlife in Joe Boggs' backyard. With the neighborhood parties and the things that he puts on. She's very good at programming that. But we're talking about Bat Week, and it's National Bat Week. Starts today, runs through next weekend. A couple great websites, of course, batweek.org, which is, I guess that would be the National Bat Week or Bat site. But then you all have created one here in the state of Ohio.
Yeah, yeah. So Ohio does have a bat working group, and basically what we do is folks that work with bats, you know, on the education side or the professional side, we've gotten together, and we talk amongst ourselves and we collaborate, and one of the things that we have done recently is to create a website, and so we have lots of great resources on there for educators, for landowners, for homeowners that, you know, have bats in their home and they need more information, and then for Bat Week, we have created a series of videos so folks can, you know, learn a little bit more about bats right here in the state of Ohio.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We come back, we're talking with Marnie Tichnell from OSU Extension. She's their wildlife program specialist. We'll find out more about Bat Week and things that you can do and things to work about. And if you're thinking right now, well, okay, so how do I get bats to hang out in my yard and garden? How do I do that? Well, Marnie's going to let us know on some of the things that we can do in our backyards to invite them in, and we'll talk more about bats. And before we finish up with Marnie, got to find out about my frogs that freeze and thaw in the springtime. Yep, we'll learn more about that here in the garden with Ron Wilson.
Help for the do-it-yourself gardener at 1-800-823-TALK. You're in the garden with Ron Wilson.
Welcome back. You're in the garden with Ron Wilson. This morning is our special guest, Marnie Tichnell from OSU Extension. She is their wildlife program specialist. We're talking about Bat Week kicks off today. And, of course, it's international, so it's trying to get recognition about bats all around the world because they are a very important part of our ecosystem and what we can do to help encourage bats. And you might be saying, what? You got to be kidding me. Yeah, they really, as Marnie said, really a major part of what we do out there. As a matter of fact, looking at our ecosystem, they eat bugs, obviously, and mosquitoes always come to mind to me.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they eat a whole host of insect species. Honestly, if you're an insect and you're flying around at night, you are not safe. and bats will eat and hunt insects in a whole host of places. So over our agricultural areas, over our forests, and over our cities and communities. So they are really really helping us out with the pest out there, the insect pest.
Now, are we seeing, you know, we address the issues of native bees, we address the issues of honeybees, we address the issues of birds and decreasing populations here and there and all that. Are we seeing the same thing with bats?
We are. We definitely are. Unfortunately, more than half of the bat species in the United States are suspected to be in decline. We have several species that are already listed as endangered or threatened. And if you look, you know, worldwide, you see the same type of losses. So here in Ohio, all of our bats are species of concern. We do have a couple threatened and endangered species. And they're under a lot of pressure right now, whether it's from habitat loss predation disease issues with the white-nose syndrome fungus.
Is that still, you used to hear a lot about that. You don't hear as much anymore.
Yeah. Well, and that's true, you don't, but it doesn't mean that it's not still happening.
Right.
It's still here. We're still seeing losses. In fact, we've seen quite significant losses in a few of our bat species, like little brown bats and tricolored bats and northern long-eared bats. So, it's still here. But this is all the more reason to recognize Bat Week and to think about some things that you can do on your property, big or small, for bats.
And again, write this down. It's batweek.org. And then, of course, Marnie and her group has put together their it's Ohio Bat Working Group, OBWG, and it's u.osu.edu/OBWG. And you can get on their newsletter and all kinds of great stuff. But they have videos, and we'll talk a little bit about that here in a second. So we look at the habitat. Obviously, loss of habitat, a major issue here. So if someone's saying, okay, I'm in, all right, I'm going to help out, what does a homeowner do in their yard and garden to help out the bat populations?
Yeah. So diversity is important. So if you're a gardener, if you like to do some work outside, you probably already have some plantings. So think about how to diversify those plantings. And because the more diverse plantings you have, the more bat food you're going to potentially attract. So one thing you can specifically do is incorporate some of our native perennials. Maybe you're also interested in bringing pollinators into the garden.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you plant those plants for pollinators, those nectar-blooming plants, you're bringing in some bat food to your backyard. And if at the same time you want to incorporate some late-day or night-blooming plants, maybe that are more pale in colored, that is also going to attract some of those nighttime insects that the bats will thank you for. So that's one thing that you can do.
Because they don't know that the what Marty Tishnell said is if you're flying at nighttime, you're a dead meat.
you're potentially in trouble.
You're
yes.
Potentially in trouble. Talking with Marty Tishnell from OSU Extension, obviously, and again, it's Bat Week, so we want to try to bring all the awareness there. So, what about talk about the habitat? These bat boxes, you see them everywhere, all different styles or whatever. Do they work? Can we really attract bats in with the bat boxes?
Yeah, so the idea behind the bat houses or bat boxes is you're providing a summer home to, and what you're really trying to get is a female colony. So our bats that form colonies, those colonies are most often females that have gathered together to birth and raise their pups. So if you can attract a colony of bats to a bat house, you know, pat on the back because you have attracted a group of bats that, you know, are very hungry and will eat a lot of insects because pregnant or lactating bats will eat, you know, 2 to 3 times as many insects as the boys do. And so that's what those bat houses are really serving to do. So if you build them well and you put them in a good location, you can really help the bats out. Now, I will say the one caveat, as we discussed with white nose syndrome, we have seen declines in our species that unfortunately use these bat houses. So these days it may be a little bit harder to attract bats to your bat house, but I'm still telling people, you know, don't let that discourage you. If this is something you like to do, go ahead and do it because maybe you will get bats. And if you do, you are really helping out a species that's already seeing some pretty serious decline.
And if you don't right off the bat, just hang in there. Just leave it up.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Don't give up on it because you never know when all of a sudden they're gonna show up. Marty Tishnell, our special guest this morning from OSU Extension. Again, batweek.org, u.osu.edu/OBWG for Ohio. And those videos and all that you've got set up there and all the topics are absolutely outstanding. You guys are doing some great work. Only got about a minute to go here. Real quick, folks think that I'm nuts, which sometimes I am. So I always talk about this frog that you told me about that freezes and thaws in the springtime. I'm not kidding about that, right?
No, and it's not just a frog, it's several Ohio species. So spring peepers, chorus frogs, gray tree frogs, and wood frogs, all this is an adaptation that they have to survive the winter. They don't often go underground to escape the frost line. Sometimes they're just under some leaves. And yeah, they can become frozen. You know, frost covered, no heartbeat, no blood circulation. It's phenomenal.
And then they thaw back out and come back to life again.
Yeah.
See,
yeah, exactly,
I wasn't kidding. Marty Tishnell just backed me up on that, and that's where I learned. Hey, always a pleasure having you on here. Always, your excitement about wildlife is crazy. I don't care what Joe Boggs says about you. I think you're great. Of course, we don't care what Joe Boggs says anyway, right?
He's too buggy.
He is too buggy. You're right. Batweek.org, u.osu.edu/OBWG. Check it out. Great videos on there. Get out and celebrate Bat Week. Marty Tishnell says get out there. And don't fly at nighttime, by the way. If you do, you could be in trouble.
Thanks, Ron. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Take care. Marty Tishnell from OSU Extension. Again, batweek.org, batweek.org, or u.osu.edu/OBWG, or just Google Ohio Bat Working Group. And when you go on there, there's all kinds of printouts, and they've got their videos and their series that you can watch and learn and get the kids involved. If they're home from school, it's a great way to get the kids involved as well. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk to Olivia Carrill. Now, Olivia's been on our show before talking about native bees and a webinar she's got coming up that you can watch on Monday with Thane Maynard. It's all happening here in the garden with Ron Wilson.
God. gardening questions? Ron has the answers at 1-800-823-TALK. You're in the garden with Ron Wilson.
Welcome back. You're in the garden with Ron Wilson. And did you know this? And you may not have. I don't know. But you know, Ohio is one of the best places in eastern North America to find bees, with over 500 species of native bees right here. And of course, as our cities continue to grow and our habitats for the bees diminish, a lot of them continue to keep right on going where that habitat and floral resources are provided for them, which is very important for us. We were just talking with Marnie about the bats. Same as with our native and, of course, our honeybees as well. So what can you do to help them out? Well, we've got a great webinar coming up for you on Monday that you can join. You have to register to do it, but you can join. And you would join at this webinar on Monday. Thane Maynard, who is director of Cincinnati Botanical Garden Zoo, and Dr. Olivia Carrill, who has been on our show many times, and she is back this morning. And don't forget, one of the best books out there. This is absolutely, I love this book. I refer to it all the time. It's A Guide to North America's Bees, The Bees in Your Backyard. Dr. Olivia Carrill, good morning. Good to have you here.
Good morning, Ron. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate you getting up so early in the morning. How many cups of coffee have you had so far?
I'm on my second.
On your second one. You sound pretty good. So, first of all, let's talk about this book. I tell more folks about this book when you want to learn about bees, because you're out in the backyard, and, of course, we're more and more of us planting pollinator plants and native plants and all that, and you see all these things that aren't really the honeybees that we're used to, and it's like, what is that? Or what is that? Or is that really a bee? And, of course, your book, you address quite a few different species of native bees in North America. It's called The Bees in Your Backyard. How long did it take you to put this book together?
Oh, I don't know, a good 2 years, I think, on and off, working around other things. Most of the problem was finding the pictures for all of those. You have to go out and spend a lot of time in your yard looking for them in order to take a photograph to put into a book.
And how many times did you get stung?
Oh, goodness, not very many. No, they don't really care about the camera. No, that's
exactly
the best part about them. They're in your yard. They're fun to watch, but they're totally harmless. They're just doing their thing.
Well, see, that was kind of a setup for you, because it's exactly right. You know, so many times, you know, kids especially, or and adults too, they see the bee, right. What do? They panic. They want to smack it. They want to run. They're scared. When actually all of these bees really don't want to have anything to do with you.
No, it's exactly right. They're just these little powerhouses scurrying around, keeping our vegetable gardens productive and our flowers blooming. And, of course, one of the biggest threats to them is removing their habitat, like what happens in most urban landscapes. And the good news is that it seems like bees are pretty resilient and they're opportunistic. And we're finding that with the slightest bit of encouragement, many can persist in landscapes like Chicago, Berkeley, California, Phoenix, Arizona. There's a lot of success stories out there with just a little bit of help. So we're hoping to encourage people to do what they can to help these little bees that were here long before us and long before the honeybees, even in places like Ohio. And working with the Cincinnati Zoo to do this, because the zoo has done a lot to provide habitat for wild bees in the middle of downtown Cincinnati. So that's pretty neat.
Talking about Dr. Olivia Carrill, and of course, you were supposed to be here at the zoo this past summer, and of course, everything got kind of canceled. So we weren't able to have you in here, but now this is an opportunity for folks, and you just don't have to live in Cincinnati to do this. You can, no matter where you live, you're going to get great information out of this webinar, but it's coming up on Monday, correct? October 26th.
That's correct. Yep.
And don't forget, you got to do us all a favor, because everybody knows what I'm going to ask you right now to do. It's the Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo.
I will check in and find out for you.
And Thane's going to say, and trust me, Thane will know right away who told you this. Thane's going to say, welcome to Cincinnati Zoo, blah, blah, blah. And then you can say, but Thane, I thought it was the Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo.
I will make sure to bring that up.
Seriously, he'll know exactly where it came from, and he'll love you for it. And we've been trying for years to get them to change the name, but they're not going to. But anyway, but you're right. They've created this oasis in the middle of the Cincinnati area, which is absolutely outstanding. That's why it should be the Botanical Garden and Zoo, not the Zoo and Botanical Garden. Talking with the Dr. Olivia Carrill. And, of course, we're talking about the native bees. And, of course, her great book, The Bees in Your Backyard, is so much fun. It really does walk you through. It's very easy to go to this book if you find a bee in your backyard that you're not sure what it is, to try to identify it. And, of course, as I've always told her, one of my favorites, talking about the cuckoo bees.
You like those cuckoo bees?
The cuckoo bees. I would call them cuckoo, but cuckoo bees. They're pollinator thieves.
They're crazy, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're out in your backyards, too. There's no doubt that you would find those if you looked around a little bit.
Stealing the pollen.
And there's different cuckoo bees at different seasons of the year. So in the spring, you see different ones than in summer and in fall. So you got to keep looking.
So you got to keep out there looking. But again, if you want to know what they look like, check out the book. It's called The Bees in Your Backyard. Of course, Joseph Wilson worked with you as well, Dr. Olivia Carrill, and you'll find it out there. And it really is a great, great reference book as well. So anyway, so I'll tell you what let's do. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I want you to tell us a little bit about what we're going to learn with the webinar on Monday, what your plans are, what we're going to learn from that. And, of course, if folks are interested in registering, and you need to register for this webinar ahead of time, we have done something a little special. We've actually put that on our website at ronwilsononline.com. If you go on there, you'll see the Cincinnati Botanical Garden Zoo Pollinator Report. It has the registration link right there for you. Now, I'll give that to you a little bit later as well, and I can email it to you if you don't get it all, but you need to pre-register for this. So, again, go to our website, ronwilsononline.com. You'll see it on there. It says Bee Seminar, and take it from there. Let's take a quick break. We come back. We'll continue talking with Dr. Olivia Carrill here in the garden with Ron Wilson.
Landscaping made easier with your personal yard boy. He's in the garden, and he's Ron Wilson.
Welcome back. You're in the garden with Ron Wilson. Special guest this morning. Her book is The Bees in Your Backyard, Dr. Olivia Carrill. She's been on our show before. Always a great. And I'll tell you what, this book is outstanding. The kids will love it as well. I mean, they can look through there and look at those pictures and learn those native bees. And then when they're out in the backyard, they can try to help determine which ones you see in your backyard. But she and Thane Maynard, the director of Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo, is putting on a live webinar. It's coming up Monday, October 26th at 4:30 Eastern Standard Time. And even if you don't live in Cincinnati, this is a webinar that I highly encourage you to join. It's free. And learn more about the native bees and what you can do to help them out no matter where you live. And, of course, she is with us this morning talking about those native bees. And before we get back to the native bees, Dr. Carrill, just noticed on the news here this morning, looks like they finally found the first nest for that Asian giant hornet out in Washington.
Right, yeah, not the best news, really. We were hoping we wouldn't find one of those. But it seems to be spreading slowly. It's been a year and a half since the first discovered one. So I don't know, maybe it'll be slow enough we can stay ahead of it.
Yeah, hopefully they'll be able to track that. And I think it's kind of interesting. They were putting the detectors on one of the bees or the hornets and trying to follow it back. So I'm glad at least they found that, and hopefully you're right. They'll be able to get that thing under control. We'll have to keep an eye on that as well. Again, talking with Dr. Olivia Carrill, and, of course, her book is The Bees in Your Backyard. Webinar coming up on Monday. You got to check this out. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I got a feeling with your enthusiasm and great sense of humor and Thane Maynard's great sense of humor, you guys are going to have a good time on this one.
I hope we do. We generally have a good time when we talk with each other. We've never done it in front of a large group before, but we're both very passionate about what we're talking about, and I think that's going to make it kind of fun for us. Thane comes at it from the
the idea of how the zoo can provide resources for people that can really help them with any sort of pollinator that they're trying to get into their yards and around their yards. And I come at it from the angle of trying to encourage people to understand all about the native bees that we have. I have a 5- and 7-year-old here with me, my own kids, and they love going out to look for bees. They look for them everywhere that we go now. And hearing a little tiny person say words like agapostomin and xylocopa is really kind of fun. So
especially
I encourage
for you.
People to get the whole family into it.
And what are you going to do when they go out on like the little, you know, the first little walks with their classes, and then of course the teacher saying, "Oh, does anybody see the bees over there?" And of course, yours are going to step up there and say the genus species of these bees.
Yeah, right.
Like what? I beg your pardon. So
the more people that know about bees, though, right? The more exactly. The more everyone will know.
Exactly.
Yeah, they can teach the teacher.
Oh, you know, I can relate because I took my grandson on one time, and they were walking around, and some lady said, "You know what these are?" And he's like, "Yeah, those are black walnuts." You know what these are? Yeah, those are hickory. And it's like, what? How do you know that? You know, it's like he's 5 years old. Well, my grandfather kind of taught me a few things. So anyway, talking with Dr. Olivia Carrill, and of course, she's going to be joining Thane Maynard on Monday. And that's we want to get everybody to this as best we can. And we love having her on our show, but, you know, you're going to learn so much at this webinar that it's crazy. And again, it's on Monday, October 26th, coming up this Monday at 4:30 Eastern Standard Time. But you have to pre-register for this so you can join in. And again, we put that link on our website at ronwilsononline.com. I will give one out that you can write down if you don't want to go to our website. So get paper and pencil in hand so we can write this down because it's a little lengthy one. But we'll give that to you as well. But talking about native plants, and I think, you know, you brought up a point earlier on that, and I give a few garden talks out there, and I always try to address the native bees and the situations going on. But you bring up a good point that a lot of folks really never thought about. And you said something about, I talk about all these different species of bees that were here way before the honeybees ever showed up.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, bees have been around for a good, 60,000 years. The honeybee was brought to North America some 400 years ago, of course. But prior to that, there were flowers in North America, and something was doing the pollinating of all of those flowers, our flowering trees. All of the beautiful understory as well. And it was our native bees that were doing that.
So, you know, and then a lot of folks sit there and go, well, you know what? You're right. I never thought about that. But yeah, there was something here doing it before they ever showed up. And the reason, of course, they brought them here was because of the...
Well, they brought them here for two reasons. I like to think of it as sweetness and light. Honeybees were brought to North America for their honey, the sweetness, and to make wax, beeswax, that could then be used in candles. So those are the two reasons honeybees ended up here. And they're great pollinators. I don't want to sell the honeybee short. But on the other hand, there are other ones here that deserve to be celebrated as well.
You know, I saw a research, Barbie Bletcher, who is our state apiarist, was talking about, we saw some research one time that said that even the introducing native bees like to orchards, like mason bees and that types of things, actually encouraged the honeybees to work harder.
It's true. It's totally true. In the presence of other bees, the honeybees definitely step up their game and do a little better job setting seed in some of our larger crops.
So real quick before we have to let you go here, you know, some of the things that you're going to talk about on Monday, obviously, but trying to increase the habitat, which is a major issue out there across the entire world, some things that folks can be doing in their own backyards?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, people often think when they hear, oh, we need to give habitat for bees, that it requires having a giant landscape. But it can be as simple as putting out a bee-friendly plant on your front porch in a pot. It doesn't have to be anything too major. It shouldn't be overwhelming. But when each of us does a tiny little bit, we can end up making a lot more habitat going down the streets. You know, a little bit on a parking strip here and there is all it takes to encourage a lot of these bees to stay put.
And, you know, I think one thing I try to encourage folks, too, is that, you know, if you live in a subdivision or development and you have a homeowners association, sometime when you all get together with a homeowners meeting, is to just somebody to come, have somebody come in that knows about the native bees or the honeybees or whatever, come in and talk about bees and they're, you know, creating that natural native habitat using native plants and whatever. But how if everybody got together and did that a little bit in everybody's yard, your whole subdivision, your whole development becomes a great pollinator station for all of these pollinators, all of these native bees and the honeybees.
That's exactly right. And, you know, you guys are so lucky that you have the Cincinnati Zoo there, who's already put together so many of these resources online
exactly.
For people to be able to go check out and really, really get started on that.
And, of course, as you walk around, and don't forget, say it with me, Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo. And you've got to keep saying that. Trust me, he'll love you for it. But as you know, they have done an excellent job. And of course, their pollinator report and pollination programs and that have been outstanding. And they've worked really hard to get the awareness out there. And they are doing a great job there. There's no doubt about it. But again, this webinar coming up on Monday will be outstanding for you. If you can't go to the Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo, it's Dr. Olivia Carrill and Thane Maynard from the Cincinnati Botanical Garden to do. They're going to do a live webinar Monday, October 26th at 4:30 Eastern Standard Time. It's called The Wild Bees of Cincinnati, learning about tiny bees that live in the big city. Now, you have to register. It's free, but you have to register to go do this. And so to register, where do you go? You can go to our website. It's ronwilsononline.com. We have posted that on that link on there for you. It says Bee Seminar. Be sure and check that out. But I'm going to give you so get ready to write this down. It's lu.ma/osmia, O-S-M-I-A, -B-Cincinnati-Zoo. And I'll repeat that again as we go through our show, and I've also got that. You can email me or go to our website at ronwilsononline.com and learn more about it. And, of course, for your own reference, be sure and get the book, The Bees in Your Backyard. Dr. Olivia Carrill is with us this morning. She is the co-author of that book. It's absolutely outstanding. You'll enjoy it. The kids will love it. You'll learn more about it. You'll learn more about what they're going to talk about on Monday. But it's absolutely wonderful, so I suggest that you do that as well. But sign up for this webinar. It's going to be fun. We've tried to get her here in Cincinnati, but due to the COVID this year, we weren't able to do that. But now we're able to.
She'll be back.
Yeah, but she'll be back, no doubt about it. But now we're able to with this webinar. So looking forward to it.
I can point out here, if it's a little easier for your folks, this whole thing is being sponsored by the Osmia Bee Company.
Yes.
And so you can just go to osmiabee.com. It's a real easy way to find the registration link as well.
Oh,
so your website and osmiabee.com.
So she did put it on her website?
She did.
Okay.
Yes, Justina did. Yes.
All right, excellent. So that's wonderful. So, and we by the way, have had Justina on our show as well, talking about those native bees. So, yeah, go to that one. It's very simple as well. So you got several options there. So no excuses to not sign up for this webinar coming up on Monday, October 26th at 4:30 Eastern Standard Time. And Thane Maynard works where?
The Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo.
Olivia, you got it. Thank you. Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you. You come back and talk to us again, right?
Thanks, Ron. Good to hear from you.
Good hearing from you. Always a pleasure. Again, the name of the book, The Bees in Your Backyard, Olivia Carrill. And, of course, the webinar, it's coming up on Monday. So you got to get registered this weekend. It's at 4:30 Eastern Standard Time. Dr. Olivia Carrill and Thane Maynard, he's the director of the Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo. And it will be a great webinar. And you can sit and you'll learn a lot. And you don't have to be from Cincinnati to enjoy this, because they're going to talk about things that you can do no matter where you live around the country that you can do in your own backyard or whatever to help out our native plants and, of course, the honeybees as well. But it's going to be a great webinar, so be sure and check it out. And we've got lots of ways for you to sign up, so you've got no excuses at this stage, right? Sign up. I'll talk. We'll continue to mention that as we go through the show as well. But, again, you can just it's very simple. Go to ronwilsononline.com. And check it out, the Bee Seminar, and sign up right there. Osmia Bee Company, you can sign up on their link, and, of course, the one I gave you as well. So check all those out. And Justina has been on our show a couple of times talking about the native bees, and she's done a great job here locally in Ohio to get out the word about native bees as well. Osmia Bee Company, O-S-M-I-A, Osmia Bee Company. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we will open up the phone lines for you at 800-823-8255. Of course, talking about yarding as we wind our way down through the month of October and what you can be doing. And, of course, fall is still here. We're right in the middle of it, and you know fall is a great time for planting, right? Right. And we've gotten some good showers through this week, gotten some moisture back in that soil. Great time to get out this weekend, next week, the following weekend, right on through up until the holiday season to get out and plant. And that includes planting that tree that is so important to plant a tree, whether it's in your yard, your neighbor's yard. Ask first before you do that. The church, the schoolyard, the park, wherever it may be, adding those trees, adding trees that flower that will help out our native bees and the honeybees. And, of course, also planting this time of the year, native plants, planting those pollinator plants, planting those evergreens for natural shelter and things like that. This is an excellent time to get out and plant. So get out to your local independent garden stores. Get on it. Get out there and continue to plant. Keep these things watered right up through the holiday season. You're good to go. In the springtime, they come back to life. And guess what? You can sit back and relax because you did all your planting during the fall season. I think that's an absolutely great thing to do. Oh, don't forget the spring bulbs. Oh, yeah, tulips and daffodils and all the minor bulbs. A lot of those are great for those pollinators as well. And now's the time to get out and get those planted as well in your pots, in your containers, in your landscape, whatever it may be. Spring bulbs are a great way to light up your spring next spring and help out the pollinators too. All right, quick break. We come back. We'll jump back into the gardening phone lines at 800-823-8255 here in the garden with Ron Wilson.
Garden growing. Call Ron now at 1-800-823-TALK. You're listening to In the Garden with Ron Wilson.
Our toll-free number, 800-823-8255. Good morning. I am Ron Wilson, your personal yard boy, talking about yarding on this 24th of October. Don't forget, again, I want to bring this up if you didn't join us in our last hour. Great webinar coming on, being based out of Cincinnati area on Monday, but anybody can listen to it. I think it would apply to you no matter where you live. It's about native bees, and one of our special guests this morning, Dr. Olivia Carrill, who wrote the book The Bees in Your Backyard, which is an outstanding book. It's a fun book to go through and look at all the different native bees that you can find in your own backyard. Well, she and Thane Maynard from the Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo are putting on a webinar.
From where?
The Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo.
Gotcha.
Putting on a webinar this Monday, October 26th at 4:30 in the afternoon. All right? And it's free, absolutely free, and that's what they're going to talk about. But you have to register before the webinar starts. You know how that works. So there's all different links to get there, but two of the easiest ways to sign up, go to osmiabee.com. That's Osmia, OSMIAB.com, Osmia Bee Company, located here in Cincinnati, who does a great job with native bees and all of the paraphernalia you need to help raise native bees in your backyard. Check out their website sometime, but it's osmiabee.com for either registering or seeing all the great things that Justina does there. Or our website at ronwilsononline.com. You'll find the registration link on both of those for you. I also have the direct link if you want it, and you can email me, and I'll send that back to you if you have problems getting through. But again, pre-register, get yourself signed up. This is going to be a fun one. You can even have the kids sit down maybe and watch this one and see what they talk about as far as those native bees. Again, it's coming up this Monday, the 26th, 4:30 to 5:30. It's an hour long, Eastern Standard Time, Thane Maynard, Dr. Olivia Carrill, and they're going to talk about the wild bees of Cincinnati, learning about the tiny bees that live in the big city. It'll be fun. It'll be exciting. They have great senses of humor. You will learn a lot. You'll have fun with it, and it's absolutely free. So, again, our website, ronwilsononline.com or osmiabee.com, two great websites to go to and sign up. And, by the way, they did find I saw a report this morning. They did find one of the nests for the Asian giant hornets in Washington. And as Olivia said earlier, we're hoping they weren't going to find that, but they did. So I guess that's a good and a bad thing. It's good that they found it because now they can eradicate it, but it's a bad thing knowing that they have actually created some nests there. So not a good thing. So hopefully they can get that thing into check before and not let it continue to spread around the United States. But, yeah, did show up this morning. But, again, don't miss this webinar. Monday, 26th, 4:30. Check it out. You'll see more information on our website at ronwilsononline.com. Worth it. Well worth it. Trust me. 800-823-8255 to Bethel. We go. Nala, good morning.
Good morning, Ron.
How are you?
Oh, fine.
Good.
I have a question about my rose bush. It has many beautiful blooms. It's just loaded with blooms. But they're all drooping. They droop just right, start to droop just right below the blossom. I had used systemic granules on it this summer.
Right. And that's good. That helps out for any of the sucking insects or leaf chewing insects. So as you looked at the stems underneath, you didn't see any aphids or anything like that on
them? No, I haven't seen any aphids.
Interesting. And they've done that all summer?
No, just a few weeks, the last few weeks.
Okay.
Maybe two weeks. Now this summer they were nice, but they weren't as overloaded with blooms as they are now.
Got it. And you know what? I think with some of that last-minute tender growth, that may be so tender. It's just not – I'm just trying to think this out. It may be so tender, just not able to support that final weight of the of the rose. So if they look good
–
and the roses still look good, I would say it's probably just that last little bit of growth that they put out – probably just too tender, and it's been, you know, you get some cool nights and whatever, just not able to support what you're seeing as far as those individual flowers. But, you know, continue to enjoy them. And again, I've seen knockout roses go until the 18th of December is the latest in our area that I've seen them in flower. So,
oh, my goodness.
They love the cooler temperatures, and so as long as they're flowering, do enjoy. But I'm going to guess that's what it is, because if you don't see anything else, I would almost guarantee you that's what it is.
Well, I would like to ask another question.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
I have a couple of real large hostas that have always been so beautiful, dark green with a white edge. And this summer I wasn't able to take care of things as much as I usually do. But I noticed that it's getting yellow and just looks real sickly.
The entire plant?
Yes. The whole plant. And I've kind of neglected them because they've always done so well.
You know, they can get a crown rot that can start to take out the plant. There's a couple viruses that can get in hostas and take them out over time as well. And I have to admit, this summer, with the heat and the dry air, you know, the dryness that we had, I think a lot of hostas got scorched pretty bad as well. Are they in a sunny location?
No, they're on the north side of the house, so they don't get a lot of sun.
But how about the moisture?
Well, no. I may have neglected them because they're back next to the house, and it's usually a little bit damp back there.
Yeah, if we rule those out, then the next things I start to look at would be possible crown rotting, possible virus that you would get in there. I think that if they come up next year, Nola, and you start to see this happening again, let's get some leaf samples to a local garden center or some pictures to me and let somebody take a look at it. Try to get a better feel for what may be going on. Sometimes just looking at the leaf, we can tell for sure.
And then
take it from there. So let's kind of write it off as nothing to worry about at this stage, maybe environmental. But again, if it starts to show up next year, now I think we got a problem. And then we start to look at it and see what we can do to try to correct it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure talking with you.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care. And to Mansfield, Ohio, we go. Eric, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing, Ron?
I'm great. How about yourself?
Not bad.
Good.
Got a question. We would like to plant some mulberry trees, use them as pollinators and also for the birds.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, they're kind of tough to find. And I have found a couple places online, and are mulberry trees, are they that hard to find?
Well, I think that, you know, not a lot of people grow them. There are some newer selections that are out there for you that are a little more landscape desirable, I guess you could say. But you know what, Eric, if you think about mulberries, a lot of folks would just consider that a weed tree.
Exactly.
You know, it pops up in the fence rows and places you don't want it to grow, and, you know, that's what it's classified. So it's a harder sell for a lot of people, so a lot of nurseries won't grow them. But you find some that will grow, you know, some of the unusual pollinators and unusual fruiting trees, you will still find them out there. The nursery I work with down in Cincinnati area does grow a few mulberries every year. So they're out there available. You can find them from some of the fruit tree growers are now growing them because folks are saying, hey, I want the mulberry. It's very perishable, but I like the mulberry. I like to eat them. So, you know, let's plant them. So you are seeing that. As a matter of fact, there is one. It's an ever-bearing mulberry that gets like two or three crops on it. I can't think of the name of it, but there is one of those one out there that's available. But anyway, yes, that's why it's hard to find because most people consider it a weed tree. But again, most of the places where you find it are either growing unusual plants or are fruit tree growers. I think Starks may grow it, if I'm not mistaken.
All right. This one place that I found, it was called Willis Orchard Company. And the thing I was wondering also is if I purchase these trees now, is now a good time to plant them?
Oh, yeah.
Or would it be better to hold off until spring?
No, either way, fall's still we're still in a great planting time. Mulberry's a tough tree. What they're going to do is get, if they ship yet this year, they're going to take that and basically bare root it so they can ship it to you. It'll be small, but you can do it now or in the springtime either way. I would love to plant them this time of the year if you can find them.
Okay, now this company says their next shipping date would be the 15th of November. Is that getting too late or is
no.
that still good?
And they do that for a reason. See, they're wanting those to go dormant. So they're wanting those to get more into the dormant period, drop the leaves, they bare root them, now they ship them dormant. So from at November the 15th, that's where they'll look at that, or then they'll turn around and cut it off at that point and do it again in the springtime before they leaf back out again.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. Well, growing up as a kid, I remember the lady next door, Mrs. Gill, we'd all get up in her mulberry tree and shake the daylights out of it, and yep. she'd make pies.
Well, you know, they're real perishables. So they don't last very long. That's why you don't see them in the produce stands or anything like that. It's a one-time shot, but you know, the berry itself is a great flavor. It's just that, you know, when they pop up and birds eat them and then they drop that on your car and on everything else, it doesn't become a very popular tree.
That's true. And the kids are purple for about a week.
and it stains your clothes and your hands at the same time. No doubt. But they're out there for you.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Eric. Good talking to you. Quick break. We come back. We'll jump back into the Gardening phone lines at 800-823-8255. You know what's coming up next Saturday? Halloween. Can you believe that? Rita Heikenfeld's going to be with us. Of course, she does her annual flying around on her broom on Halloween night. But it'll be a special one for her because we have the blue moon next Saturday night.
Yes.
Full moon on Halloween, which is very unusual. We'll talk to her next Saturday. Quick break. We come back. We'll continue on at 800-823-8255 here in the garden with Ron Wilson.
Green thumb or not, Ron can help at 1-800-823-TALK. This is In the Garden with Ron Wilson.
Welcome back. You're in the garden with Ron Wilson. Again, that toll-free number, 800-823-8255. Again, don't forget the great webinar coming up this Monday, October the 26th. All right, October 26th, 4:30 Eastern Standard Time. They're going to talk about native bees. And, of course, it's focused here in Cincinnati. Thane Maynard from the Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo. Olivia Carrill, who is our native bee expert. They'll both join together to give this. It's going to be a fun. It's only an hour. It'll be fast, exciting, great humor. You're going to love it. It's absolutely free, but you have to register ahead of time to do this. All right? Two ways to register. I've got the links for you. Go to osmiabee.com. osmiabee.com, go to their website, or go to ours, ronwilsononline.com. Either way, you'll find that link to it Register. Be ready to go Monday, October 26th, 4:30 Eastern Standard Time. A great conversation, great webinar, The Wild Bees of Cincinnati, learning about tiny bees that live in the big city. No matter where you live across the country, this will apply to you as well. So you don't have to live in Cincinnati to want to watch this thing. But it's absolutely free. Don't pass it up. It's Monday, October 26th. Register this weekend and be ready to go on Monday. 800-823-8255. Kate in Ohio, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a drift rose, a ground cover rose.
Mm-hmm. Love those.
And I've been, I love this thing. I have been told that I need to cut it down. My question is when and how far?
Usually, here's what we do, and the reason they say cut it down is that they seem to respond nicely. And most of the carpet or low ground cover roses seem to recover nicely and do better when you cut them back pretty hard, like 6 to 8 inches or so, and then let them flush back out. Typically don't do that until springtime. So going into the winter, going into the fall, and it's probably in flower right now.
It is, and it's huge.
Yeah, so let it flower, let it do its thing, let it keep right on going. They may last right up until Thanksgiving. And at that point, once they really seem to start to shut down, flowering is done, and all, you could go through and kind of clean it up a little bit. Sometimes I'll just take the head shears and knock some of those old blooms off the top and just kind of make it look okay for the winter. But then the heavy cutback happens late winter, early spring. And as we're breaking and getting into that warmer weather, you get in there and literally you cut it back to 8 inches above the ground, just kind of mound it off. And then you flush up a whole new plant again, and you get much more color. The plant looks nicer. They just respond very nice to that. But I save the hard pruning on roses for the spring rather than in the fall.
It's showing a lot of powdery mildew on the new buds, the ones that haven't opened yet.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Do I need to get those off of there?
I wouldn't worry about it. No, at this late in the stage, I wouldn't worry about it, as far as spraying or anything. But when you do that light shearing and you collect that up, if you can kind of toss it off of the plant, collecting that up and getting it away from the plant obviously is a great thing to do because you take those spores away. Obviously, the weather has to be right for it to happen, but that is a good way to clean it up. And then in the springtime when you do that, when you clean up and get all the rest of that, you'll be taking it away from the rose, rake out from underneath it, get all that debris away from it, and now you've got off to a pretty clean start as we go into the season. And then you can kind of monitor to see. They typically don't get mildew that often, but I guess if the conditions are just right, you'll see it occasionally. So it can happen. But other than the fact that when you shear those off, later on to clean it up a little bit, if you want to collect those up and get them away from them, great. But when you do it in the springtime, get everything away from it. Now you're off to a clean start.
This winter, do I put leaves around it? Do I do anything to protect
it? You don't have to. See, those are on those again. Oh. Those are very tough, very durable. If they would die back to the ground, would still come back up for you from the root system. They won't complain if you want to dump a bag of leaves or pine soil conditioner or something like that right in the center of the plant to protect the – basically, you're going to protect the bottom 4 to 6 inches of the canes and right at that base. When we heal in roses for the winter, we're trying to protect, especially if they're grafted, that graft in the bottom 6 to 8 inches of the canes from the severe winter. So if you wanted to dump some of that in there to the center, it won't complain about it. It'll be fine. But that's a rose, again, that you'll see used in traffic islands, or out in the open by the street or whatever it may be. And they are not protected. They just sit out there, do their thing, clean them up in the springtime, pop right back up for you.
Okay. And I don't have to do any fall spraying on it, anything like that?
Nope. Not unless you've, and again, they're typically very low as far as disease issues. And seeing a little bit of powdery mildew show up, that's why it kind of surprised me. But it could happen. But other than that, not really. Just a good, clean up the ends. Cut it back hard in the spring, clean everything away, and you're good to go.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Hey, you're welcome. Good talking to you. And again, she's talking about drift roses. I love them. They're a ground cover type rose, although they can get knee high, 24 inches high. Some of the varieties maybe even waist high, but more of a ground cover, kind of spread out wide, moundy, really will take over. And they flower off and on all summer long. low in disease problems. Just a great overall, nice, easy to take care for, ground cover type rose. Drift, D-R-I-F-T, happens to be the name. All right, quick break. We come back. A little home improvement from the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Gary Sullivan, then Buggy Joe Boggs here in the garden with Ron Wilson.
Landscaping made easier with your personal yard boy. He's in the garden, and he's Ron Wilson.
Welcome back. You're in the garden with Ron Wilson. Time for the man, the myth, the legend, most listened to home improvement show host in the entire solar system. His name is Gary Sullivan. His website is GarySullivanOnline.com. And with us to share home improvement tips, ladies and gentlemen, is the one and only Mr. Gary Sullivan.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And I think your introduction has proven to be fruitful for you, as I've noticed. You've had several offers to host game shows, so keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
You betcha.
Now, who's going to spin, Gary? By the way, if we did Hollywood Squares, would you be in the middle?
No.
Why not?
I'd be raking leaves.
Who was your favorite guy that was always in the middle?
I don't know.
Hollywood Squares, didn't you watch that?
I watched a little bit of it, but I don't know.
Paul Lynn.
I watched it in the 80s, but I don't remember who was on it now.
Yeah, jeez.
Paul Lynn, he was
Ron's
always
like
funnier
that TV
than heck.
Guy. He always knows all that stuff.
Nah, I don't know.
Ron knows everything.
Where are you going to be Monday afternoon at 4:30?
Raking leaves.
Nah, you're going to be sitting in front of your computer with a webinar learning about the bees, native bees in our area.
Oh, I am?
Yes, you are.
I saw the killer hornet? They found a nest.
Oh, they found the nest.
Yeah.
A nest.
Just inside our border up in Washington, right?
Yep. They put a tracker on one of those. You talk about interesting. They actually caught one, put a tracker on it so they could track it back.
Ah.
Imagine how small that thing is?
Yeah.
And then they could follow it back to figure out where the nest was. So when they flew back to the nest.
That's how they found it.
That's how they found it. And, they were actually hoping that it was just a couple of them still flying around. But surprise, there is a nest. So, good news, bad news.
Yeah.
Good news that they found it, bad news that they found it. Because that means they're there.
And is there another one?
There
will soon be.
So hopefully they'll get it eradicated before things happen.
So the biggest thing about the killer hornet is it annihilates the honeybee, right?
It goes after the honey, and then, of course, it winds up killing all as many as it can to go in there after that, and it's not a pretty sight.
Hmm.
Now, I guess the Asian honeybees
they can attack back.
Yeah, they've actually figured out how to attack back and heat up and do all that kind of stuff.
Oh,
of course, our bees don't know anything about that, so.
So they could be at war.
They could be at war. Yes,
be at
they
war.
Could. Yes. Yeah, I get it.
That's all I got for you today, sir. That's all I got.
So anyway, be sure and learn more about native bees on it's a free webinar at 4:30.
Okay.
And you can sign up for it at our website at ronwilsononline.com.
Very cool.
So make sure you're there.
Are you hosting that? I mean, you're introducing the
Thane
host
Maynard.
Or anything?
Your buddy Thane.
Thane, all right.
Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo.
Uh-huh.
He's hosting it with Dr. Olivia Carrill, and she's been on our show many times.
Yes.
Talking about native bees. So they're doing the webinar. So.
And they will do a fine job, I'm sure.
Oh, they both have a great sense of humor, and they know a lot.
They sure do.
So it'll be a good one.
Well, I agree.
So now I guess the question is now, Mr. Sullivan,
mm-hmm.
How come you and I aren't doing webinars?
I don't know.
You know, the Around the House webinar.
Wow. Well, let's do one.
What do you think?
Okay, I'm in.
I like it.
You and me.
Oh, I'm in.
Okay.
Kind of do a webinar every weekend, though, don't we?
Well, we do, sitting right here. Okay. But, during the week, have a little webinar. And
I'm in.
People can
let's
see you on the screen and see what you
let's
look like.
It.
And
they don't want to see that.
Put my
they can see
there.
His palatial mansion.
Yeah. So.
My palatial. I'm raking leaves.
Are you?
Ron, I've raked so many leaves, I can hardly move.
Have you mowed a few back in, though?
I have.
Okay, good.
Kidding me? If I had to rake them all, I'd be dead by now.
We don't want that.
Holy cow. Man, there were a lot of leaves this year. I guess that's what happens when you live in the same house for a while.
Yeah, the trees get bigger.
Leaves, yeah, I remember when I hardly ever had to rake leaves.
And now, well, you've always had to rake leaves, though, even as a kid.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
I think my ash tree's finally finished, though, so that's the big one. The locust is finished. The birch tree started yesterday. The maple in the back started yesterday, so we're half done.
You're half there.
I'm half there.
But by no means is Gary Sullivan encouraging anyone to take trees down.
No.
Because of the leaves. Just rake the leaves.
And mulch them back. I did, you know, you would have been proud. So I had so many leaves. You said, are you going to mow them in? And I said, no, there's so many leaves. And there were tons of leaves. So I raked. And I raked. And I raked.
Did you start a compost pile?
Yeah, I did, actually.
Good.
And then I took the mower.
Yeah.
And mulched in what wasn't finally raked.
Okay. That's good.
All right. And then 2 or 3 days passed, and a bunch of leaves fell.
Mm-hmm.
But not so many I needed to rake. So then I put the bag on the mower, and I scooped up the remaining amount.
Mm-hmm.
No, actually, I mowed them in, and then I ran it down. And then I mowed back to back. So I mulched, and then I bagged. What do you think of that?
I like that. That's
too much time on my hands?
No. That's plenty of time. It's a good workout for you.
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah. So anyway, it looks pretty good. A few leaves.
And by the way, you're not actually mowing the grass. You're just mowing up the leaves.
That's true. However, this is back-to-back mowings. One day, next day with the bag, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing how much that grass grew in one day.
Well, you had a little shower came through there.
And cool temperatures.
Cooler temperatures.
Oh, the yard looks nice.
Good.
Yeah.
Your yard always looks nice.
Yeah, yeah. So today we're going to talk about chimneys.
Oh, chimneys. It's that time of the year.
Yes, it is.
You're going to fire that thing up when that raccoon nest is up in there. They're not going to like that at all.
No, and neither are you.
Neither are you.
In fact, even folks that have a fireplace, I hope you have a carbon monoxide detector in your home. Because if there is some ventilation issues, you want to be warned because you can't smell carbon monoxide, can't taste it, can't see it. So that's a silent killer. So, you know, just as a precaution, make sure you have a carbon monoxide detector. And then we're going to talk about how to stop chimney leaks, how often you need to have it cleaned, whether those chimney cleaning logs work. And, geez, if I use those, do I really have to have the chimney cleaned? So we're going to cover all of that today.
Should somebody get up and check out the around the top of my chimney, too?
Yeah.
Does that go along with all this?
Yeah, we're going to cover it all. So
okay.
What you're talking about is the crown wash, which is pretty much a concrete pad that ties the brick fascia or facing and the liner together. So that's the top of the chimney, and then you got your flue going through that. Those, like sidewalks, have a tendency to crack over time. And when they crack or spall, moisture can get down between the liner and the bricks, and then the bricks start chipping off and your liner could crack. The other place where it's vulnerable for leaking is where the flashing tucks into that second course of brick. And then the third place is just the brick itself, especially if it's reclaimed brick, soft brick, getting that waterproofed. Three good places to take a look if you got a chimney leak. And we'll cover all that in great depth.
What if you have a gas insert, you know, in your fireplace?
Mm-hmm.
Does that need to be, that gas thing need to be inspected every year as well?
It should be at least every 2 years, maybe not as efficiently as if you're burning wood. But, yeah, a chimney should be inspected periodically. If you're burning wood every year, according to the National Fire Protection Association, if it's gas, every 2 years. And sometimes if your gas logs are developing a lot of soot on them, there is a, and it, you know, people, they always read their owner's manual, right?
No.
You know, and when they read it, they never forget what's in it. But there's actually a certain way to set logs, and every set of logs is a little bit different. And that's so that you can get air to, you know, clean flame burning, and it starts getting smoky or reddish. It's not burning pure, and those logs need to be cleaned and reset. So, yeah.
What's your favorite wood to burn?
I think apple.
Hmm. Actually, fruit wood is very good wood in the fireplace.
It's very dense, very hard.
Ash is usually the best, though.
Yeah.
Burns the cleanest, puts out the most heat.
I do.
Where are you going to find that, though?
What's that? Apple? Oh, ash tree? Yeah. Stay out of my yard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Gary's got one.
Jeez. So those fires in Colorado, they were talking about the beetles that have done damage to the pines.
Right.
And I've been out there, and I saw there's just mountainsides just of dead trees.
Yeah. Well, at least that helps to get rid of those.
Yeah.
Cleans it out.
Yeah. So it does not, do that.
Not a good thing, though.
Not a good thing.
Oh, my. Gary Sullivan coming up next. Of course, his website is GarySullivanOnline.com. And, of course, if he's not coming up next on Where You Hear Him on our show, call him and find out why he's not. Gary Sullivan, always a pleasure.
Try to behave this weekend, will
you? What are you going to be doing at noon?
At noon?
You're doing a show. Never mind. I'll be watching the Buckeye game.
I'll be doing a show. Thank you.
But you can always put it on the TV up there, you know.
That's true.
In your room.
That's true.
All right. Coming up next, Mr. Buggy Joe Boggs here in the garden with Ron Wilson.
Landscaping made easier with your personal yard boy. He's in the garden, and he's Ron Wilson.
Welcome back. You're in the garden with Ron Wilson. It's time for the Buggy Joe Boggs Report. Mr. Joe Boggs, Assistant Professor. By the way, did I say enough?
Yes.
Did I say enough?
You said enough.
Okay.
You said enough. I'll tell you after.
OSU extension.
Yeah, OSU extension.
Buggy Joe. He's here.
Yeah.
First of all, I told there you go. We had Marnie Titchenall on this morning, which I know you didn't catch because you were still sleeping.
I was outside, actually.
And I told Marnie, I said, you know, even though Joe said, because we were talking about it's National Bat Week, Bat Awareness Week. You knew that.
Yes, that's right. I put white powder on my nose.
Oh, don't say that. That's not even funny.
It isn't funny.
That's not funny in the bat circle. Now, bats come up from South America and bite you.
We're going to get called.
Wherever they are. No, we aren't. You are. I didn't say it. You did.
No, I was thinking of Halloween. I was going to go as a bat. And,
speaking of Halloween, I know you like Jeff Foxworthy, of course. You're a redneck win. But did you see the weather forecast for us next Saturday?
I didn't.
You know you live in Ohio if you wear your snow jacket on Halloween.
You know, that's true, isn't it?
Yeah. And it looks like they're calling for cold weather next weekend. But anyway, I told Marnie, I said, you know what Joe Boggs said? If there was anybody that was any battier, it would be, you know, Marnie Titchenall to talk about bats.
Oh, no. Did you say that?
Yeah. And she was like, what? I said, just consider it was Joe Boggs.
Oh, gosh. Bat. Oh, I'm in trouble. I mean, you've just gotten me
in
trouble.
It's whatever I can do to help get you in trouble. Then we've got Rita's recipe this week is bourbon bacon caramel popcorn.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that is just that, you.
Yeah,
well, really. That's for today. You know, the problem with that recipe is, well, like yesterday evening, I mean, the Big Ten is back, right?
Right.
I don't know if you watch Wisconsin. And
I did not. Some of us had to go to bed.
I had to watch that. It's the kickoff. I mean, finally, we don't
get to see some real football.
Exactly. Watching all these lesser conferences like SEC and all that. You know, now we finally have.
Again, Joe Boggs said that. I did not.
So remember that, Harold.
Yeah, I did not say that. I went to the University of Kentucky. I respect SEC.
Yes. My son went to UK as well.
Your son went to UK as well.
That's right.
Anyway. Great recipe. And then, of course, on the other flip side of that, if you were using up those green tomatoes, the mock raspberry jam and cake.
I just drooled all over. I tell you, it is a green tomato.
Green tomatoes.
Oh.
And then, of course, the plant of the week is Buckeye. So all the Ohio Buckeye, Red Buckeye, Yellow Buckeye, Bottle Brush Buckeye, Red Horse Chestnut, cross of a Buckeye and Horse Chestnut. So that's our plan of the week, and then how to grow your own Buckeye tree. So there you have it. Oh, by the way, where are you going to be Monday at 4:30?
I'm going to be listening in to a very fascinating webinar. I'm already registered, signed up. I will be there.
Are you really going to go?
Absolutely.
Oh, excellent.
In fact, I was just about before. We have an office conference at 4 o'clock. We do it by Zoom, and I'm about to send all my office colleagues a link to register because, you know, we usually are on at 4 o'clock and just let them know I'm going to be jumping off at 4:30 to hear a fantastic webinar.
Now, about what?
Yeah, about wild bees.
The wild bees of Cincinnati.
Tiny bees that live in the big city. Well, and it's not just Cincinnati. Think about this. That's
we've been saying all through the show. You don't have to live in Cincinnati to watch this thing because it applies to all the cities out there.
Well, and what you know, we're so lucky. I mean, you know this. Thane Maynard, you know, director of the Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo.
Thank you very much. And, of course, we talked to Dr. Olivia Carrill this morning, and she is supposed to tell him that when the webinar starts. So when he introduces himself as, you know, a Thane Maynard director of the Cincinnati Zoo, she is supposed to correct him and say, I understand it's the Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo.
That's right.
So we hope that she comes through for us.
Now, wait. You don't want to let that get out. I mean, let's keep it just between you and I.
He's not listening.
I don't know. I mean, it could get. I mean, because so let's just keep it to ourselves.
All right. We won't tell anybody.
Yeah, that's right.
If you want to be like Joe on Monday at 4:30, sign up for this webinar. No matter where you live, there's several links. You go to our website, ronwilsononline.com. You can go to Osmia Bee Company, osmiabee.com. I've got another link for you. We got links everywhere. But sign up for this thing this weekend so you're ready to go. 4:30 on Monday for a great webinar. You will have fun with this one.
Well, I'll tell you, and you'll learn a lot. And we're gonna have. I mean, I heard you're already gonna do one. And by the way, I mean,
but you and Rita and I do one.
But you and Gary talked about everything I was gonna talk about. The murder hornets.
Sorry.
It was fun.
Why did you call them murder hornets? We refer to them as the giant Asian hornets like you told us to.
Oh yeah, that's right. I don't know. Did I say that?
No, you didn't.
Joe said that.
I did not.
It's a white nose problem, the syndrome. I tell you. It's causing me.
I hope Marnie comes after you.
She will.
I hope so.
I'm gonna start looking out my window right now and see if there he goes, a Batmobile slowly driving past.
My.
You know, seriously, this whole thing with the pollinator report, and I mean, it dovetails so nicely with what is now becoming one of my most popularly demanded talks is about, you know, the connection, you know, connect the dots, right?
The butterfly garden is not for butterflies anymore.
It's for pest management.
Yep. I thought that was one of the – you give a lot of great talks, but I really enjoyed that one.
Well, and I'll tell you, it's what nature does. I mean, that's the point to all this. And so what we're talking about for folks – I mean, we have talked about this before, but it's this connection between pollinators, what we would – you know, think of as pollinators or not think of as pollinators. Maybe I should put it that way, reverse it a bit. All those insects that come to pollinator gardens, you know, come to plants that are producing nectar, primarily thereafter nectar. Some also feed on pollen that are also enemies of other insects. And so, for example, these parasitoid wasps, you know, again, we've talked about this a bit, but you know, those cocoons that sprout from the backs of tobacco and tomato hornworms that are on your tomatoes. Well, the female wasps that go after those caterpillars have to have nectar. They're very tiny wasps. I mean, they're so tiny and they don't sting. But the point being is, where do they get that nectar that then allows them, gives them the energy to be able to fly around to find the caterpillars in which to lay their eggs? Well, mm-hmm. They get it from plants that we plant that are flowering, and they get that if in your landscaping you increase the diversity of flowering plants, it's good for the pollinators. But it's also very good for pest management. And you know the place where I first observed this in action dramatically was at the Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo.
And you'll be watching them do their webinar on Monday at 4:30, and you can be like Buggy Joe Boggs. If you want to be like Buggy Joe Boggs, go to our website and sign up. It's ronwilsononline.com or osmiab.com, and be there on Monday at 4:30 like Joe and me and all the rest of us. Joe, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you next Saturday, which I understand may be your last Saturday for the season.
Maybe pupating after that.
Sadly so. We'll talk to you next Saturday. Go Bucks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks to all of our callers. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks, of course, to Danny Gleason, our producer, because as you all know, without Danny Gleason, none of this stuff would happen, literally. So thank you, Dan, for everything that you do. Now, do yourself a favor. Think about where you're going to plant those trees. You've got plenty of time to plant trees, spring flowering bulbs, native plants, pollinators. Get out there and plant. It's fall. And by all means, make it the best weekend of your life. See ya.
For the do-it-yourself gardener at 1-800-823-TALK. You're in the garden with Ron Wilson.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.